Good to see you. It's amazing how good I am at making announcements from my seat. I'm terrible at it when I'm up here. So Kyle said, any more announcements? And I said, well, I'm sure there's more, but I don't know what they are. But then I don't know that he mentioned that his own sister is out of town, but he might have, and his niece, but he might have mentioned that. She's in Texas. And also Amy is traveling, so miss her as well. And the two Mikes aren't here yet. Hopefully both of them will show up. So miss them as well. And seems like we're missing. Oh, wanted to also mention about, let's don't forget Mark. And I know it's been hard on him losing his sister. And we want to remember that family. So, but again, it's good that the ones that are here are here. And I'm going to talk this morning about some subject that Glennon must have known what I was going to talk about, because he's got 429. Something that just fits perfectly with what the lesson is going to be about. It's amazing how often that happens. I just think sometimes I'm thankful that we, we'd like to think wise people's minds work together, but then there's me and Glendon, so that can't be possible. But we are glad that in this case it did work out. His might be wise, mine not so much. When we think about things in life, I mean, we typically, we're followers. Most people are followers. Even when we have a leader, usually that leader has followed someone else. That's a pretty amazing thing when we think about it, because we look at how people develop their lives, and it's usually from looking at what other people did, and they will do whatever that person did. I'm amazed at some of the language that is used anymore about this. People will talk about, for instance, the situation in the world today, and a lot of what's going on in the Middle East, and they'll talk about a person that is in this country that starts following the teachings of a certain individual. In this case, it'd be supposedly a Muhammad. And they'll talk about that person, and they'll say, well, then they'll go somewhere and they'll be radicalized, and they will start then being a disciple or a follower of, and that's what they talk about. Well, believe it or not, you know, we all, again, follow things. We follow people. We learn from people, and we become more like them. And how many of us wanted to be like our parents when we were little, and then we reached the point where we didn't want to be like them at all? And then we went through another age, and we went like, wow, you know, they weren't as bad as I thought they were. And that's not saying all parents are that way, but for the most part, those parents had tried to do right. Well, there's a word for this used in the Bible. It's used a lot. It's a disciple. And when we think about this word, being a disciple is pretty common. As it's used in the New Testament, it's mostly used in, you know, the Gospels and very little after that, but maybe through the book of Acts, and then it's not used very much. But we talk about this and we find that there were those that said, well, they were John's disciple. And then a comment is made when the Pharisees realized that Jesus had baptized more people than John had. He had made more disciples, if you will, even though it says he didn't do any of the baptizing. They were concerned about this because, okay, we've got this coming in, now we've got this coming in, what's going on? And they weren't following what the Scriptures say. Then in a discussion with Christ, when he was trying to get them to follow God, they made a comment. They said, well, we are Moses' disciples. And that's a problem. That is a problem. Even though Moses was sent from God, they should have been a disciple of God, and they should have been a disciple through Moses to God. And they didn't need to follow Moses. They needed to follow the teachings that Moses had. And so they missed the point about all of this. And, of course, all they were saying was that they weren't going to follow Christ. Now, a disciple usually follows a set of rules or regulations or disciplines. And they try to kind of restrain themselves. Even though they have their own thoughts and ideas, they'll do whatever the master says. We were studying from Colossians 3 today, and it's interesting in all of that, you look at, I think, maybe three different false. One had God had set up, but now he no longer wants them to do it. But two of them were very false religions. And when we look at what they were following, they were just following human beings, and they were listening to these philosophies, and they were listening to these things, and they were going back and indeed believing more in Moses than they were in God. And so they were just doing these things, and then these people would come up and say, well, you know, if you'll just do these things to your body, all this mysticism, then somehow or another you'd be pleasing in this life. Not necessarily to God. But in the Bible, we don't see that at all. we see some things about this, and as I teach this lesson, you're going to understand as I teach this, oh, to be like thee, is a very important thing. That as I go through this, you're going to see me repeating some things, but in a different way of looking at it as we go through it. It is one of those things that needs to be made repetitious. Because I want to tell you something, and I'll tell everyone in this room, you're a disciple. I will guarantee it today, you are a disciple. But you better be a disciple of Christ, because you will follow something. The Bible's clear of this. It says you'll either be a servant of righteousness or a servant of unrighteousness. You're going to serve God or mammon. You're going to serve God or Satan. There's no middle ground on this. You can't pretend to be a disciple of Christ and do what you want to do. And this is a problem with people. They think, well, he'll be happy with me if I just do what I believe is right. And he won't be. And he's clear about that. And he makes it perfectly clear. So what would we say about this? In John 15:8, for instance, he said, "But this my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit, so you will be my disciples." You see, in this, we just look at this text only, we'd see the importance of being a disciple. A disciple is a person who's a pupil, or an inherent of the doctrines of another, a follower. And I would argue that all people are to some degree. There are people who will follow the philosophies of the Communist Party, for instance. One who accepts and assists in spreading the doctrines of another. The first one was dictionary.com. This is Merriam-Webster. And not only do they do this, not only do they adhere to it, but they want others to do it as well. And they'll go try to do that. Isn't that true? We look at all these people today and they're out there trying to make these other folks into what they believe in. In Cambridge Dictionary's online, a person who believes in the ideas of a leader, especially a religious or political one, and tries to live according to those ideas. You see, it's more than just believing in one. And Vine would tell us it denotes one who follows another's teaching, and that's the way it's used in the Bible. So, what are some attributes of a disciple? Well, a disciple wants to be just like his master. We'll see these movies where they want to learn some kind of a martial arts, and they want to be like their master. And whatever the master tells them, that's what they'll do. And so much of that is involved in that type of situation. And so, being like our master. Christ would say it like this in Matthew 10. He wanted them to understand what it meant to be a disciple of his. And he says, I want you to understand something. He's going to send them out. He's going to send them out to teach. And he's telling them that I want to warn you up front about all the things that are going to happen. And so if they'll do things to me, they'll do things to you. Please understand that when you go out, you're not going to be treated very well. People will not accept this. And so then, in a discussion of this, he says, a disciple is not above his teacher, nor a servant above his master. It is enough for a disciple that he be like his master, and a servant like his master. If they have called the master of the house Beelzebub, how much more will they cast those or call those of his household? He said, let me explain this to you. You need to be exactly like me. Now I'm going to tell you, I don't know of anybody in this room that would have anything in their mind to believe that you want someone else to be exactly like you. But that tells you how Christ was so confident in his life and what he was doing. And he was perfect in all that he did. So he wanted us to be exactly like him. No variations. He is our example. He's the one we follow. He's the one we look up to. He is the one that we are a disciple to. And we need to recognize our place. And that's what he tells them in Luke 6. And when I read these, obviously you're going to find they are repetitious. Because Christ was repetitious in this. He wanted everyone to perfectly understand what this means. In 39 and 40 of chapter 6 of Luke, he spoke a parable of them. Can the blind lead the blind? Will they not both fall into the ditch? Now, he's leading into something. He's saying, now, I'm going to tell you folks, don't follow Abe. Do not be his disciple in religious matters. He's blind, comparatively speaking. He'll get you in trouble. You're following these Pharisees. You're following these Sadducees. You're following these Herodians. You're not doing what
you need to do.
A disciple is not above his master, but everyone who is perfectly trained, New King James, will be like his master. We need to recognize that. We need to recognize where we are. And in 14:26 of Luke, in a more discussion of this, and I would recommend you go back and read the context of all of these, because I sure don't want to take them out of context. He says this, "If anyone comes to me, does not hate his father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, and yes, his own life, he cannot be my disciple." And that's strong language, and people soften this all the time with, you know, what he's saying is, I'm going to tell you right now, in your mind's view, I'm it. Do not ever, ever, ever put someone above me or ahead of me. Do not ever in your religious life follow someone else. Do not ever do what your spouse wants you to do because that's what they want you to do. Do not ever do what your parents want you to do because that's what they want you to do. None of this is important when it comes to me. You want to be my disciple? Everybody else had better be pushed away. Second, do not do that. And he's talking in context of following him. Follow me only. And we'll accept the suffering. We already read that he said some things about this in verse 27. And whoever does not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. This life, he said, you're going to go through some things. You remember what he said up front? If they call me doing these things as Beelzebub, what do you think they're going to call you? And so we can see in this that there is something to bear with this. That people are not going to always accept who we are because we are following Him. And we're going to follow Him regardless. And they're not going to understand and know that. But he also goes through this passage and he said, hey, before you accept this, you better count some costs. You better understand what this means in your life. You better start putting everything else aside for me. You better start thinking about what I want you to do. In other words, when I even go back to my relationships, you better do what I say you're to do in those relationships. And in this case, you better count the cost. You better understand and know what it means when you get yourself in a situation and you don't do what I want you to do. For which of you, intending to build a tower, does not sit down first and count the cost, whether he has enough to finish it? Same context of being his disciple. Lest after he's laid the foundation and is not able to finish it, all who see it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. Or what king, going to make war against another king, does not sit down first and consider whether he's able with 10,000 to meet him who comes against him with 20,000? Or else, while the other is still a great way off, he sends a delegation and asks conditions of peace. So likewise, whoever of you does not forsake all that he has cannot be my disciple. And that's the next point. Forsake all. The word forsake is strong. And lots of times we don't put enough emphasis on it. He said, if when it comes down to it, if you have to, you're going to have to put everyone else and everything else aside. Forsake all. You've got to count the cost of this. He said, I'm going to tell you something, Abe. This is costly to be my disciple. Because I am going to tell you, you have to do exactly what I say. You have to be exactly like me. And if it means putting everything else aside and forsaking everything else, you have to do it. That's strong. I mean, sometimes we think, why? No, I don't need to do that. Let me tell you people who did. Paul. He forsook everything. He gave up his family. He gave up everything temporarily to do what Christ wanted him to do. Because he understood it cost something. His early disciples, they understood that, all but Judas Iscariot. And then we'll deny self. We will not put ourselves first. We will understand that, okay, now I have forsaken everything else. No, I'm not going to put my father, my mother, my wife, my children. I'm not going to put anything above you. I'm not going to make anything greater than you. I'm not going to let them influence my life to where I do wrong. I'm going to do exactly what you tell me to do. But now, wait, what about me? I'm a little different. You know, I have to live in this body. Now, I've got some needs. And I've got, he says in Matthew 16, yes, you do. But you better understand those needs and you better only do them in the context of what I tell you to do. In 16:24-26, if anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and again use this terminology, and take up his cross and follow me. How many times does he say this? Often, if you think about it in the Gospels, take up your cross. You've got something you have to do. You can't just sit there and hope that things work out well. This requires something on our part. We don't just sit here and accept God's or His Son as our personal Savior and go through life and do whatever we want to. That's not a disciple. A disciple puts everything else aside. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it. Whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. And that's strong language, because he's saying, if it means that you're going to die, give it up. But it also means give it up in the sense of letting this world die. Do what you need to do to be my disciple. For what is a man profited if he gains the whole world and loses his own life or soul? Or what would a man give in exchange for his soul? Some have argued that this just simply means if it meant giving up your life, would you do it for him? Or a greater meaning, if it meant you could not have eternal salvation, would you sell it out? What would you do? We think sometimes, well, we're so strong, we would do whatever, we would do this, we would do that, and we need not think that, because our strength only comes through Him. And He's trying to remind us, always, always, always think of me, and then you can make it. And again, we'll only do what the Master asked. Won't come up with our own thoughts and ideas. Again, these overlap, but in 10:42, whoever gives one of these little ones only a cup of cold water in the name of a disciple, assuredly I say to you, he shall by no means lose his reward. And it would seem like, well, this is just a good work. And he's saying, if you'll just go out and do some good works. But John 15, he makes it clear that we have to be extremely careful. We have to make sure that we are doing what He asks. Because He says, if you ask anything in my name, I'll do it. If you love me, keep my commandments. So when I give that cup of cold water, I have to make sure that I'm doing it according to what He's told me, how He's told me to do it. A cup of cold water could mean that I'm helping someone who deserves no help. He says, don't do that. So I have to know His commands. I have to understand and know. And I have to be able to rightly divide His word. And He says that His disciple will endure to the end. That what we have to, we can't just start this process and say, okay, now you've accepted me, Father. Now I'm in good shape with you. And now I can just live my life again any way I want to. Not so. He talks about to be hated, but He says this, that he who endures to the end will be saved. That this is not just some process of, well, I want to start out right. I want to kind of be like Christ, you know. But, hey, He'll understand if I don't. No, He won't. Look at what He did with His disciples. I want you to think about this for a moment. This relationship that we have with Him started with His early disciples. He was so good with them. Here He is, the Word, in flesh. He says, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. He is God. He understands and knows all. And when He comes and talks to them, He doesn't demean them. He doesn't put them down. He wants them to understand some things. And He constantly is telling them about His upcoming death. And they don't accept it. They don't understand what He's about to do. They want Him to be a king on earth. And they just don't get it, because they've already got a preconceived idea. They're not truly at this point the disciple He wants them to be. He's done all kinds of things to kind of hone them and make them better. He wants them to fully recognize this, because they're going to go out and they're going to tell others. But they're struggling with it. So He starts telling them about His death, His burial, and His resurrection. And again, it's many places in this. And they just don't get it. They don't want this to happen. And they're like, no, you can't do this. Even to the day before, or the day of, they're gonna finally crucify Him. They're still not wanting Him to do it. They just can't understand this. But He loves them so much, He's trying to explain to them that this is of necessity that He die. If He doesn't die, there will be no kingdom. There will be no king. There will be no master. And there will be no disciples. Because that's what was necessary to do this. In 16:21, he began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and be raised again the third day. And that seems so plain to us reading this. But as he was telling them this, they had shut their ear to it. This was not something they wanted to hear. Their master is going to die. But he says to them, "You're not greater than me." And he'll tell them later on, "If they'll kill me, they'll kill you." And you know what they did? They did. They killed them. All but John. They were killed. He says, "I'm doing it for you. I'm not just doing this because it's something, not only as my Father, I'm obeying the will of my Father, but I'm doing this because of you. I want you to understand. I want you to get a feeling for why I am doing all of this, why I can be your master." I've thought about so many times, people want to be masters, but they don't want to do any of the suffering. You ever notice that? Let all the little people do the suffering. I want to be the master. But in the case of him, no one can say that about him, as we'll study later on. Could not say it about him. In 15, starting with verse 12, "This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you." That's what it's all about. Greater love has no one than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. We find later, though, that Paul would say, actually, it was while they were enemies. But he's saying, it's from his point of view. He's made them friends. They were enemies of God. These men that he's with are enemies of God. They are not getting rid of their sins, as they should. "No longer, and you are my friends if you do whatever I command you. No longer do I call you servants, for a servant does not know what his master is doing, but I've called you friends. Me, from my point of view, for all things that I have heard from my Father have made known to you." In other words, I have not left one thing out. I haven't hidden anything from you. I'm giving you all the privileges that I have from my Father. I am telling you everything that I'm allowed to tell you. I am making sure that I'm doing the will of the Father, so I want you to do my will now. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you should go and have bear fruit and that your fruit should remain, that whatever you ask the Father in my name, he will give you. These things I command you, that you love one another. He said that's what it's all about. But he gave them the salvation, eternal salvation, something they had been looking forward to, something that they truly needed and wanted. In Mark 16:16, "He that believes and is baptized shall be saved." That means you were lost in your sins. But in addition to that, he gave them his name. You know, I don't understand sometimes the process anymore of people with so proud that they won't take on the name of someone else. But I'll tell you something. I am thankful that he allows me to take on his name. I am thankful that he did this for us. In Isaiah 6:2, Isaiah was prophesying about a time that would come. And he said that all kings would see his righteousness. I mean, the Gentiles would see his righteousness. And all kings his glory. And they would be called by a new name, which the mouth of the Lord shall name. Well, they've been called brethren. They've been called saints. They've been called lots of names. So what was this new name? Well, it was going to happen after the Gentiles had seen his righteousness. Some 10 years after the gospel was preached to the Jews, Cornelius heard it. And the first Gentile that Peter was sent to preach the gospel to, just like Christ had promised him that he would open the keys of the kingdom. He'd opened it to the Jews, now he's opening it to the Gentiles. After that happens in Acts 11:26, it says, "And the disciples were called Christians first at Antioch." I think sometimes we'll call ourselves all kinds of things, but I'll tell you what, this is the most important of all. It means you are Christ-like. I don't know about the rest of you, but I'm thankful to live in this country. I am thankful to be we call ourselves Americans, because it's a little hard to say you're a United States of Americans. But anyway, we take on all of Americas. We say we're that. And that's a beautiful thing. And I think how precious it is to have been born into this country and thus would get my citizenship. And I think of how precious this is, because Paul said in Ephesians 3:14-15, "For this reason I bow my knees to the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, from whom the whole family in heaven and earth is named." And I think in terms of, okay, the greatness though of what we're talking about, to be a Christian, if any man suffers as a Christian, almost you persuade me to become a Christian. Did people know what Christians were in those days? Yes. You know why? Because they didn't carry any other name. They weren't Church of Christians. They were Christians. They used that name over and over and over again, and they were thankful to be a part of Christ, to be baptized into Christ. And you remember what I said? I was born in this country just like all of you were. And as a result, we were automatically made citizens of this country. We can lose that citizenship. But when it comes to this, out of the 12 that he first chose that we talked about, and I'm going to get back to what I was just talking about, out of the first 11 were faithful to him and became his apostles, out of these disciples. They became ones sent. They received a special privilege of being his apostles. They weren't Apostle Paul. It was not a title. It was who they were. A Christian is. A Christian means, just think of, I don't think we understand the importance of that. They were Christians, and he sent them to be apostles. But you know why? Because they obeyed his commands. 11 of them did. They did exactly what he wanted them to do. They didn't question him. They wanted to be just like the Master. You know, they even, Paul said he was thankful to bear the marks of Jesus in his body. He understood the importance of being a disciple. He understood what this meant. That first and foremost was important to him. He only wanted to prove his apostleship because they were denying that. That part didn't mean, but to be a disciple of Christ, to be a Christian, meant everything to him. But for us to use his name, we'll put all kinds, as I've said before, descriptive things in front of Christian. But we're either Christian or we're not. We're either Christ-like or we're not. We're either a part of him or we're not. When we look at it, that starts with a strong faith. A strong faith. A faith that says, I now know who the Master is. I now understand. I believe that Jesus Christ was the Son of God. I believe that He gave me His will, and I believe that I'm going to count the cost. I'm going to become His disciple. That means I've got to make some changes. I've got to repent. I've got to turn away from where I'm going. I've got to get away from sin. I've got to turn to Him. I need to confess Him as the Son of God. I can't be ashamed of this. I need to tell people I want to be a Christian. I want to be born into the family of God. It takes a birth. That's what he told Nicodemus. It takes a birth. It takes coming up out of the water. It takes, just like the physical birth and coming out of the water and becoming a living human being, it takes coming out of the birth of baptism, out of that water, being completely immersed in it, to be believe that God took away our sins, as we studied in Colossians 2 today. I think I said Colossians 3 earlier. I should have said Colossians 2. So, this is what it takes. But to be Christ-like is to be obedient, which means I can't quit at that. I have to keep on keeping on. And as I do that, just as He obeyed His Father in heaven, we need to obey Him. So, as Christians, do we want to truly be like Him? If you're not a Christian today, there's only one way to be like Him. Be obedient. He obeyed His Father, He said. He submitted to Him, and yet He said He was equal to Him. He submitted to Him. So how difficult is it for us to submit to His will and become His children? Or how difficult is it as Christians to say, yes, I want to be like Him. I want my life to reflect His. If you have any need to sing a song, we'd be glad to help you any way we can.